Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello. Welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. And joining me from Canada as he takes a break from the CFL playoff preparations, my usual partner, Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, have you stepped up those preparations? Is it all business now at your end?
Well, it's always all business in pro football. But when you get to the playoffs and you get as deep as the playoffs, you know, in the playoffs as we are right now, it's even more life and death, because it is, if you lose, you go home. You don't play anymore. If you win, you get a chance to go on and play in the championship game. So it's been, you know, I wouldn't say deadly serious around the office, but you can sense the heightened feeling of, importance of everybody's preparation and everybody's job.
Absolutely. Jeff, I've got a good feeling about this podcast, and I'll tell you what. I've just walked down Oxford Street. It's pouring with rain. I've been knocking people out of the way with the biggest Miami Dolphins umbrella you could ever wish to see. And I've sat down in the studio and they've just brought the best cup of coffee in. It's fantastic. So it's a good start already. So I'm feeling good.
It is.
I'm feeling good. And I
simple
actually...
pleasures, my man.
I know. And I actually had a great pleasure yesterday. And we'll hear from this guy next week. But a completely random thing. I ended up spending the day with a Pro Football Hall of Famer yesterday. So... the NFL UK office got contacted by Curly Culp, who was a defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Houston Oilers. Went into the Hall of Fame in 2013 after a 32-year wait. So he was a man with a lot of patience. And he wanted to see Wembley Stadium. And NFL UK said, oh, you know, who's going to take him out? And I was put my hand straight up because I wanted to go out and listen to, you know, I love listening to all the old stories. And we did an interview outside in the stands at Wembley Stadium, and people can hear that next week. We'll play some of that into the podcast next week for you all to hear. But as usual, Jeff, all the best stories came when we were riding to and from Wembley Stadium in the bus. But it was a fantastic day that was a bit unexpected.
You know what? What a great player he was. I remember as a little kid, this is the Kansas City Chiefs that went to the Super Bowl very, very early in the games, and Hank Stram was the head coach, and Buck Buchanan, Curly Culp, you know, that was a great, great Kansas City defense. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Curly was a NCAA wrestling champion.
Correct.
As a collegiate athlete.
That's right.
And then was just one of the really powerful, built low to the ground guys that was, you know, played the game the way the game was meant to be played. Really. And I've heard of very, very much a gentleman.
Yeah, he was a great guy, and his wife Colette. It was lovely to take them around Wembley Stadium. They were a lot of fun. We drove back to the centre of London and took a detour. They wanted to see Buckingham Palace, so I felt like I had a little tour of London as well. But it really was fantastic. And we were talking about how do we take him out to Wembley Stadium, because is there traffic, and you know, should we get on the tube and go on the underground? And I was kind of thinking, whatever takes the longest, let's go in the car so we can sit and talk football. But it was great. He was saying how he started out. He was drafted by Lou Saban and of the Denver Broncos, and they were adamant he was going to be an offensive guard, and he didn't want to play guard at all. And so he ended up halfway through his rookie year, he was a first round draft pick, got traded away to the Chiefs, and then became a Hall of Famer. So it was an incredible journey for him, and a great day. So we'll hear from Curly Culp next week. We're going to take a look around some of the games in week 11 in the NFL and take your questions in the mailbag. And Jeff, we've got to start. It wasn't the biggest game of the week. There were big games this past weekend, but the Washington Redskins fell to a 20-point defeat at home to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Incredibly, the Buccaneers are just two games out of first place in their division now, but at 2-8. But the stuff with Robert Griffin III, I mean, it feels like we sat here this time last year, Jeff, had the same conversations about a fractured relationship between RG3, some of his teammates, and the head coach at that time, Mike Shanahan. Here we are again. RG3, you know, was pointed in some of the comments he made. He was talking about how the Peyton Mannings and Aaron Rodgers of the world don't play well if their guys around them don't play well, which sort of led to a response from Jay Gruden yesterday, which was pretty incredible. We'll get into the detail of that in a moment. He was laying out some of the fundamental flaws of his quarterback, but here we go again with RG3, the Redskins, and the coaches.
Well, you know, how many generations, if you will, have we had this kind of issue in the Redskins organization? I mean,
yeah.
It was there when Schottenheimer was there. It was there when Spurrier was there. You know, it's been, you know, it's really sad, frankly, because, you know, when you fight inside, you have no chance of winning outside. Mm. And, you know, obviously, RG3 was frustrated, and everybody in the organization had to be frustrated playing that poorly against a bad Bucs team. But then when you go out and make statements like he made, and this is not the first time he's made some statements that, you know, he's just young kid, sometimes doesn't understand the impact of everything that he says. And then to be taken to task, really, publicly by your coach was, I think, a little bit surprising too, because, you know, it's one thing to say that, you know, RG3 needs to play better, or, you know, everybody can recognize that comment as for what it is. But when you actually go in and pinpoint the, you know, the problems in his game, you know, he's supposed to take a 3-step drop, he takes a 1-step drop. He's supposed to take a 5-step drop, he takes a 3-step drop. He's, you know, yeah, now you're calling out his technical flaws in the public, and that now, that's a serious, serious thing between a player and a coach, and that can fracture a relationship. And, you know, what you always worry about in the Redskin organization, or what I do, is that the players go over the top of the coach to Mr. Snyder. And that's been the history there, or the reported history there. And if that indeed is happening, then the head coach is in serious trouble, because he now loses control of his room.
That does feel like that was the case, Jeff. I mean, last year we were looking at it from the outside, but it felt like Dan Snyder clearly said, well, if I've got to choose between Coach Shanahan, 2-time Super Bowl winning coach, or this guy who I gave up the farm to go and get, I'm going to have to go with the young quarterback. It sounds like they did that. And, you know, I don't know if they do that again with Jay Gruden now coming in as the new coach. But one of the key men in this who no one will know of is the public relations man, Tony Wiley, is going to be wanting to get these two guys together and say, well, let's just be careful about what we do. But that's not really that practical, because this is a star quarterback and this is the head coach of the football team. You can deliver all the PR bullet points in the world that you want to deliver, but you're dealing with two very powerful characters.
Well, two very powerful guys, and two guys that are very frustrated right now. Obviously, RG3's frustrated with his play, and frankly, it sounds like the play of some of the guys around him. And, you know, Jay's frustrated with his football team. And so that's not a good mix. That's not a good recipe for, you know, harmony in the locker room or harmony in the media. And you know, you know how it is when we live in this media age. The media is going to take these stories and run with them. And so I'm sure this is not the last we've heard of it. There'll be a public burying of the hatchet somewhere soon, but you got to wonder about really what is, you know, the situation in the locker room in Washington.
I guess the whole point of whether he's spoken out in the media, I mean, as a journalist, I love the fact he's been honest enough to say how he feels. But then here is the backlash, and so maybe you have to be a little bit careful. I remember when there have been some issues with RG3 in that locker room, and we had Aldrick Robinson on this podcast, and Aldrick said he's a great guy. And that was the public lie. It felt like it was a little bit of a public line, and maybe he does think he's perfect. I don't know. But we didn't push Aldrick on it because he was firm in, you know, he's a great guy. There's no problem in our locker room. And then the story kind of moves on. So in a way, RG3, by sort of not saying everything's perfect, has made it more of a story. And then the coach has as well. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of that where you think, well, at least they were being honest. But from your side as a coach, I guess you would say, Robert, look at how Tom Brady runs a press conference. Look at how Peyton Manning does it. You don't have to answer every question.
Right. And now, again, when you talk about those two guys, you're talking about two very different guys, right? Number one, Brady was raised in an organization, or came up in an organization, where the culture is patriot speak, right? Mm. Not about me. It's not about my thing. It's not about, you know, it's not that they don't do it that way there. That's not the patriot way. Now, also, Manning grew up in a football family. His father was a player, you know, and he understood how much, in a much, much clearer manner, the way that you, you know, you cultivate and craft an image and all of that, and you know, and but this kid has not come up that way, right? And he had tremendous success early, and you know, you think about guys like Bill Parcells, who he always talked about, don't be a Hollywood quarterback, you know, and but. In you know, this game, when you play that position, the tendency is always there because you get much too much credit when you win and much too much, you know, criticism when you lose. That, you know, the tendency is to, it becomes a, hey, it's all about me situation. And when the criticism comes, the easiest thing to do is to point fingers. And, you know, the hardest thing to do is to hold it together publicly in the media. And if you don't have a culture in your organization built that way, these kinds of things happen. And this has been a historic thing in the Redskin organization.
Let's talk about the technical point of what Jay Gruden said then, Jeff, and you can shine some light on this. He said he took 3-step drops when he should have taken 5, 1-step drops when he should have taken 3, stepped up when he shouldn't have, read the wrong side of the field. On the footwork, because Jay Gruden said his footwork was below average, take us inside the game, Jeff. When RG3 is taking 3 steps instead of 5, 1 instead of 3, is he simply forgetting? Is he lazy? Or is he shortcutting because he's panicking and not letting the play develop? Tell us from an X's and O's point of view how you end up taking 3 instead of 5, 1 instead of 3, and so on.
Well, typically it's a combination of all of those things.
Right.
But here's what the problem when you do that. Is their offense, like most offenses, is a timing-based offense. If you have a 3-step drop, for example, the routes break at a certain depth so that the timing of the route and the quarterback's drop, he's at the top of his drop, ready to throw when the route breaks or just before the route breaks. Well, if you don't go to the prescribed depth, if you, for example, take a 1-step drop when it's a 3-step drop route, you're standing there ready to throw the ball. You're not at the depth that the offensive lineman think you're going to be at to protect you, because they're taught, they have their back to the quarterback as he takes his drop. So they're basically protecting a spot on the field where they believe the quarterback's going to be. Well, it's hard to protect if the quarterback's not in the spot where you anticipate he's going to be. Now, they gave up 6 sacks in that game, and some of those were because of that misreading the field, not getting the depth in the drop, had to hold the ball for the route to come open because he didn't take it because his footwork was poor. All those things make it very difficult to, you know, be efficient and effective offensively. And so, you know, whether it's laziness, whether it's, you know, rustiness, whether it's, you know, panic in the pocket, whatever it is, it could be any of those factors. And usually it's a little of all of it. You know, that's a recipe for disaster offensively. You're just not going to be efficient. And that's what we saw with the Redskins on Sunday.
Tough couple of games coming up for the Redskins. They're at San Francisco, at Indianapolis. And the star of this game, Jeff, and we won't get into every game, we never do on Inside the Huddle podcast, but the star of this game was Mike Evans, the rookie wide receiver for the Buccaneers. He had 7 catches, 209 yards, and 2 touchdowns. In his last 3 games, Evans has caught 21 passes, 458 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So let's use Mike Evans, Jeff, as a starting off point to talk about what has been a very good, we knew this around the draft, I think, what has been a very good rookie class of players, and especially at the wide receiver position. I mean, back in the day, it used to be, well, you could never play wide receiver straight away in the NFL, and you've got, I mean, Sammy Watkins has been a little bit up and down, but you've got Kelvin Benjamin starring, Brandon Cooks has done stuff. You could even go down to Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson at Jacksonville. I mean, the rookie wide receivers, they have to have impressed you.
Well, this is one of the better rookie classes I've ever seen at wide receiver. And, you know, you look at Evans, for example, on his 46 catches, the guy's averaging 17 yards a catch and has 7 touchdowns. That's phenomenal for a young player. And, you know, Kelvin Benjamin in Carolina, the same thing. Big, tall guy that makes some really big catches. Now, he's a little inconsistent every once in a while, but those guys have proven that they can play and play at a high level as rookies. Sammy Watkins, as you said, they've had trouble getting him the football, but you see in his play flashes of why you would trade up to get him in the first round. And, you know, you go through the league and they're just, it seems like every team has a young receiver that, you know, is, you know, showing that he is ready to take his step and ascend into the higher level of, you know, receiver play in the league. And they're big. I mean, so many of these guys are big, big people. And, you know, that's really a tough situation for defensive coordinators now, because where do you find, when you roll out Mike Evans at 6'5", 231 pounds, where do you find corners that can match up with him?
Yeah.
And, you know, with the way the game is, you know, the rules are being enforced now, you can't get your hands on them at all past 5 yards. And now these guys have free access up into the back end of the defense. And, you know, they're just, it's like you're throwing passes to basketball forwards instead of, you know, NFL receivers. These are big, big human beings.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, I'm glad you mentioned the rules there, because you're a man who personally tutored Aldrick Robinson, Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley, and sent them all on their way to the NFL. So are these college wide receivers better prepared, and that's why they're having success? Or is it that it feels a bit unfair to just say, well, the rules are easier. I mean, the rules are easier, but these are still, are they better prepared? Is there more passing in high school? I know, you know, there's a lot more passing camps, 7-on-7 leagues. And Christian Ponder was telling me when he played in Texas as a high school athlete, he played a bunch of sort of 7-on-7 leagues where it was all passing. So are they better prepared, or is it the rules, or is it, again, like so many things in the NFL, it's a combination of both?
Well, you take a kid like Evans who grew up in Dallas and then played at Texas A&M. During his high school years, you know, there's so many opportunities in the state of Texas for a kid to practice. They have a long football season. Then they have more practice, spring practice, you know, in the spring semester of the year than the colleges actually do. And then as soon as summer vacation starts, these kids get involved in traveling passing leagues where they'll play sometimes 35 and 40 passing games a summer. There's actually a state championship in passing league football or flag football in Texas where these teams are playing all year long. So obviously they develop, they catch more balls, they have a chance to see more things. Then they go to college, and now, you know, you look at college football, it's amazing how when you go back 15 years in the state of Texas, you couldn't find 15 programs where they were playing with four wide receivers. Now it seems like everybody in the state of Texas is in the shotgun and four wide receivers and throwing it all over the field, and they're putting their best athletes. This is the other thing. In the past, football coaches put their best athletes on defense.
Yeah.
And that's changed now. Philosophically, you're seeing more and more of the great athletes playing on offense because scoring has become more important.
Yeah, and Jeff, there's a combination
of a lot of things.
Yeah, do you remember when, back in the day as well, I always go back to this example, when Troy Aikman transferred from Oklahoma to UCLA because Oklahoma were running the wishbone and he wanted to be a pro quarterback, and he had to transfer schools to be able to get ready to pass in the NFL. That isn't the case anymore, is it? You don't see that happening as much.
No, not at all. And I mean, even schools like Georgia Tech, for example, that still runs a version of the wishbone. Georgia Tech's put some pretty good receivers into the National Football League. And, you know, so everybody's throwing it to some extent. And then I think the rules changes, frankly, have helped these kids too, because you can't do some of the things that you used to be able to do down the field to these guys. And so they're seeing simpler coverages. People aren't getting their hands on them down the field. And, you know, they're bigger and better prepared. And it's really an amazing thing to watch these guys come in and in some cases dominate games like Mike Evans did the other night.
Yeah, I was going to say, put a full stop on this little conversation. There may be a whole bunch of reasons, but they're fun to watch, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Let's look at some of the games then, Jeff. And I picked out just a few of the games from Week 11 in the NFL. Starting with Kansas City beating the Seattle Seahawks. This was an old school type of game. You know, Marshawn Lynch had 124 yards. Jamal Charles had 159 yards. But my takeaway from this game, if I'm a Seahawks fan, is I want to know how healthy. I haven't actually seen the report. He probably was already out for the year or something. But Max Unger got carted off at center. He'd only just come back the week before. I know he's your guy from Hawaii, and he was a big difference to their running game the week before against the Giants. He got carted off in that game, and I thought they really missed Brandon Mebane. in the heart of that defense. Kansas City run it up the gut time and again.
Well, that was the thing. As I watched that game, that was the thing that was so shocking to me, was just how physical Kansas City looked compared to Seattle up front. Mm. And Kansas City's offensive line, I thought, did an outstanding job. Now, you know, they got a great back to block for in Charles, but they just physically took it to those people up front from Seattle. And, you know, everybody wonders what's wrong with Seattle. I don't think there's particularly anything wrong with Seattle, although, like you said, Mebane, you take out Mebane and you take out Red Bryant from last year, and that's a whole different complexion inside, you know, in terms of big guys. And if you don't win on first down against a team like Kansas City, and I mean win on first down, if you don't get the opponent in the second and six or better, then it's really difficult to play defense, because now you have to play both the run and the pass. Where Seattle was successful in the past was they would, you know, could stop the run.
Yeah, make
and
it
then
a long down.
Force you into a one-dimensional game, and then, you know, then the pass rushers took over. Then, you know, you saw, you know, Michael Bennett and those guys get after the quarterback.
Well, Chiefs never had to be in that situation. Alex Smith threw for 108 yards. He just didn't need to be a part of the game. It was, and so then you take out the strength of the Seahawks, the secondary, the pass rush. It was all completely taken away. Taken away from the Detroit Lions was the ability to score a touchdown. It was Arizona. Actually, before we go on to that game, Marshawn Lynch staying out on the field at halftime, Jeff. Do you have a problem with that? Pete Carroll has now said he knew about it, but we're trying to make something of it in the media.
Well, I again, when you have a player like Lynch, he's going, you know, you remember when we were at the Super Bowl last year, what a circus it became
circus.
With him not going to talk to the media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what comes with him. And you just have to make a decision how much of it you're going to take. And, you know, eventually war is welcome out here in Buffalo, and that's how he ended up in Seattle. And I think at some point, you know, you make a decision. Is his production worth the distraction that he brings? Right now, it's, you know, Seattle is willing to put up with this kind of stuff because the guy's a legitimate player. I mean, he is a great running back. And, you know, it's unfortunate to me because what does that say to your teammates? It's, again, I'm different. I'm special. I'm a little bit, you know, it's about me. It's not about you. But, you know, again, that's been his history. It's what you get with him. And I don't know him. I don't know if he's a good guy, bad guy. I just know that this is a team game. And when you put yourself outside the team, it can create problems. Especially, it's all good when you're winning. But if you're not winning, then that's when the problems could start. You know, let me just say about that game. A kid that I watched in that game that just made me go, wow, is another rookie. DeAnthony Thomas from Oregon.
Yeah, he's exciting.
Man, is he an electric player.
Yeah, he's another one of those, Jeff, where if you said, tell me DeAnthony Thomas's position, you'd be like, well, I don't really call him a wide receiver. I'm not really sure he's a running back. Well, he's a return man, I know. He's one of those where but that's good. I mean, you want that. You want somebody like that you can move around all over your formation.
I thought it was really interesting what he said. He was talking about his game, and he said, well, you know, when I was at Oregon, I never got tackled. I fell down a few times, but I never got tackled.
I bet he didn't in college football. Arizona beat Detroit 14-6 then, and this was a game. We've got a question in the mailbag, actually, which I can pull out now. It says it's from Andrew Ewan, who says, with so many points being scored this year, especially through the air, are we seeing cases of bad defense or great offense? I mean, we have got some great offenses around the NFL, but some defenses stood up this week, Jeff, and we can talk about these games in conjunction, if you like. Arizona got two early touchdowns to beat Detroit, but that was a slugfest, and their defense made those 14 points stand up. And then St. Louis beat Denver 22-7. They made Peyton Manning very uncomfortable. So there are still some good defenses out there, and defense does still matter.
Oh, no question. And, you know, you look at the defense in Arizona, you know, they've structured a back end that's really, really special. And, you know, Patrick Peterson is one of the really fine players in all of pro football. And, you know, it was interesting on the week that Todd Bowles, who's a defensive coordinator there and a guy that a lot of people are talking about as a potential new, you know, head coach in the National Football League, signed a big contract extension to stay in Arizona. That defense came out, rewarded him and came out and really, really played well against a, you know, a Lions offense that's shown that they can be explosive. So Arizona to me is just an amazing team. Now here comes Stanton, who's, you know, failed in Detroit, failed other places, and they throw him in there, and doggone if he doesn't, you know, throw touchdown passes and lead his team to victory. Third different, you know, they've had three quarterbacks start for him this year, and here they are, the only team with one loss, I think, now left in the league. So it's amazing how well they're doing, and Bruce Arians and his staff have done a phenomenal job out in the desert.
It did look, every time I looked up and watched some of that game on Red Zone, Calvin Johnson was blanketed and Stafford was throwing incomplete passes. The secondary has really stood up. They got Deion Buchanan added to that mix. Jeff, what do you make Tyrann Mathieu? I mean, he would have been a first round pick, wouldn't he? I mean, he's turning out to be an absolute steal in the third round.
Yeah, you know, again, a phenomenal player. It's funny, this is amazing about this kid. I'm at SMU, and I have Louisiana as one of my recruiting areas. So I go to New Orleans, St. Augustine's School in New Orleans, a private school right down in the really tough section of New Orleans. And Dave Johnson, the coach there, is a good, good guy. And one of his assistants played for me in the Canadian Football League. So I'm in there, and he brings this kid out. This little scrawny kid is about 5'10", maybe about 165 pounds. He said, "Coach, this is Tyrann Mathieu." And I look at him on tape, and this is his spring of his junior year when kids really get recruited. They're in spring practice, and it's a private school, so he's got a tie on, and he comes out. And I take the film back to SMU, and we actually reject him on tape because we thought he was too small. And the DB coach didn't like him. He didn't want a 5'10", 165-pound DB. You watched him on tape. You could hardly see him on defense because the film was so bad. But as a punt returner, the guy was amazing. And I wanted him just as a punt returner. I said, if you don't want him on defense, we'll take him as a punt returner. Well, at that time, he had no scholarships. Then all of a sudden, boom, he blows up. He goes to LSU and then has a phenomenal – you know, a phenomenal start to his career, the Honey Badger, the whole deal. You know, he becomes a cult hero in Louisiana, gets himself in trouble a couple times and gets suspended, gets kicked out of school. And then it was really Patrick Peterson that saved the kid, took him under his wing, took him to Florida, trained with him, lived with him, you know, and really begged.
Yeah.
Arizona to take him in the draft when a lot of people said, nah, he's a two-time drug problem, you know, had marijuana issues in college. But doggone, I'll tell you what, he watched the kid and he's just phenomenal. And if he walked in the room right now where you're at, you'd look at him and go, that's Tyrann Mathieu? You got to be kidding me. There's no way that guy's a... But he is a competitive athlete and really a great player. And I'm happy for him because he seems to have got his life in order too, which is the most important.
I think that's it. He's grown up as well, and he's learned from his mistakes. We aired a show ahead of the draft this spring on Sky Sports, and it was made by NFL Films. It was called "Hey Rookie, Welcome to the NFL," and it basically charted a series of about six or eight rookies who were going through the process of the combine, the workouts, and then they filmed them as their name was being called and they were being drafted. And you're right, he worked so closely with Patrick Peterson that it was a perfect match when he went to the Arizona Cardinals. But he had his own draft party, so that ESPN were there filming, waiting for his name to be called. He wasn't in New York, so he was having his own party. And a couple of his friends had put these water bottles on the table. And he was like, take those bottles off the table. And his friends were like, what are you on about? It's water. And Tyrann Mathieu went, no, they look like beer. And from a distance, he said, when you're looking at those through the camera, he said, they look like beer bottles. He said, no, they're like, it's water. He's like, I don't care. It looks like beer. Take it off the table. And I thought, you sound a lot, you know, he didn't sound then like the young man I'd read and heard about, you know, playing in college. So I was quite impressed by that.
Well, you know what? And you really hope that the kid takes advantage of an opportunity to change his life, because you know, now to play in the NFL and make the money that he's making, you're going to set your entire family up. And like I say, he comes from a very difficult background and a very difficult place in New Orleans. And, you know, he's one of the success stories, and I hope he can continue and you know, has a great career in the NFL and then goes on after his football's over with and has a great life, because, you know, there were a lot of people that said, don't do it, don't take him, don't, you know, he's a problem. There's going to be a continued problem, but he has, and this very rarely happens, so it's such a great story when it does. He seems to have turned the corner.
Jeff, I think in the preseason, I took Green Bay and Denver as my Super Bowl lineup. I'm pretty sure, if I remember, you had Green Bay and New England, and if that's the case, you must be feeling pretty good after Green Bay hammered Philadelphia and then New England did the same to Indianapolis.
What? Green Bay goes out and hangs 50 two straight weeks.
Oh,
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is playing so well, and Jordan Nelson and he have an unbelievable connection. You know, I actually felt bad for the corner from Philadelphia, because who will go unnamed, because don't want to single him out. But I mean, he couldn't get his hands on Nelson off the line of scrimmage, and Jordy's so long and big, and Rodgers put the ball on him on two fade routes right down in the corner in the end zone, and he kind of tight roped it into the end zone, and I just said, man, oh man, oh man, what a player. And their entire offense, Lacy gives them some things. Their offensive line's playing better than their offensive line has played in a while. And, you know, they are going to be a handful going down the stretch, because they're really playing good football. If they can stay healthy, they're really playing good football right now.
When we look at the Kansas City Chiefs, we know it's a ball control attack, very low-risk offense, not asking too much of Alex Smith. When we look at Green Bay, we know it's Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson. When we look at the New England Patriots, they change every week. One minute they're throwing the football all over the field and it's Gronkowski and Brandon LaFell. The next week they've got seven offensive linemen in the game and it's Jonas Gray going for 199 yards and four touchdowns. I mean, they are an example, aren't they, of, you know, week-to-week coaching in the NFL at its very best.
Yeah, and using your entire roster.
Oh,
and that's
boy.
One of the things that's a hallmark of a Belichick coach team. Everybody on that roster is going to contribute in some way.
He was a practice squad guy.
Pardon me?
He was a practice squad guy a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. He does a phenomenal job. As a matter of fact, Adrian Clem, who played for us at Hawaii and was drafted in, I think, the second round by New England, has a Super Bowl ring from that his time and his career there, and is now the offensive line coach at UCLA. I asked him, I said, what makes it so unique in New England? There were a lot of things, but one of the things that Belichick talked about was that if you were on the roster, if you were on the, you know, the active roster for a game, you were going to play and you were going to have a role. And that's what he does better than anything. He takes what he has and implements plays or systems or packages that give that athlete a chance to have success. And really, they do that probably better than anybody, frankly.
One last thing, Jeff. Week 11. What a catch by J.J. Watt. This is a 3-4 defensive end. It's a 3-4 defensive end, man.
He's a freak is what he is. I mean, he is amazing. You know, it's interesting. We talk about in our meetings, we talk about, you know, greatness and studying greatness. And he's a guy that we put on the overhead and up for everybody, all the players. And we had that shot of him with his nose all busted and on the sideline. And he made a statement about success. And it was really, I thought, a great message to send to our players after we had won the Eastern Division, was that success is, nobody owns success. It's only rented, and the rent comes due every day. And I thought that was a great insight into what makes him such a great player. Now, he's a great athlete, and he's got a lot of physical attributes and all those things, but his competitiveness is incredible. And you saw that, you know, you saw that on that play. Obviously, he's a great athlete, but what a phenomenal catch, and competes for the ball. And just everything he does, he does the right way. And I'm a big, big fan of his.
He's done it after he's been paid, Jeff. You sometimes see guys do it in a contract year. He just got the big contract, but you're right, that hunger and desire has not gone away at all.
Well, and you know what? If you're going to pay a guy, pay that guy.
Yes.
You know, pay that. That's the guy to pay, right? And I think that, you know, one of the reasons you pay a guy like that is because he's going to make everybody else around him better. Just his practice habits, his intensity, his desire to succeed, all those things rub off on other players. And I would be willing to bet you dollars to donuts that if you see where Jadeveon Clowney's locker is in that Houston locker room, it's not very far from J.J. Watt's.
Mm. Are you suggesting I'd rather have donuts than dollars? What are you suggesting?
Well, the value of the dollar right now, you might be. Donuts might be worth more.
All right, we're going to look at make our picks for Week 12. Jeff went 9-5 last week. I went 8-6, so you got me by a game last week. Week 12 in the NFL. So, Jeff, just before we get into the games, just quickly, 6 games left in the regular season. But this is where, I guess, for those rookies, it becomes, you know, tough now, because there's still 9 or 10 games to play if you're going to go all the way to the Super Bowl, 10 if you're a wild card team. So as a coach now, is anything different in the second half of the season? Is the mental and physical preparation the same? Obviously, I guess there may be more bodies in the trainer's room. Tell us about if anything changes from a coaching perspective over these final 6 games.
Yeah, it really does. Because you talked about you hit on something that's very, very important that fans understand. For the rookies now, this is, you know, we're into week 12. This is a full college season that they've played now. And every game that they play from here on forward are games that their body's not used to. You know, you're talking about a college player who plays 12 games and maybe a bowl game. Now he comes to the National Football League and plays at a faster, more physical level, but he also has to play, you know, he's got to play more games, and he's had a longer preseason and more preseason games. So that wear and tear on his body and just the mental grind of the preparation, which is so intense in pro football, it really, you hear coaches all the time talk about the rookie wall. And now is when rookies tend to hit the wall. So it'll be interesting to see how some of these guys perform down the stretch. And then as a coach, you have to recognize that your players have been at this thing now for months. And it's not tennis or badminton or soccer. Or, you know, this takes a tremendous toll on your body. So typically what teams do towards the back half of the season is practices become shorter. There's less hitting. There's less physical stuff. It's more mental as you go forward, more walkthroughs, because you just can't beat their bodies up at this stage in the game.
Okay, let's get on to week 12 then in the NFL. It starts on Thursday night, Kansas City Chiefs at the Oakland Raiders. I am going to tell you now I'm going to pick the Chiefs, but I want you to spare a moment, everyone, and think about the Oakland Raiders. They've lost 16 games in a row dating back to last season. But I want you to especially think about defensive end Antonio Smith, because Jeff talks time and time again about how much preparation goes into each game in the NFL. So the Raiders this year are 0-10. Antonio Smith was on a Houston team last year that lost its last 14 games. So Antonio Smith is 0-24 since last season, Jeff.
You know what? I can't even imagine.
You can't
how
even
tough
laugh.
That is on him mentally. I can't laugh because I've been on some teams that went on bad runs, but I've never been around anybody that many losses in a row has just got to be just devastating to you. And, you know, full credit to the kid that he comes back every week and
play hard.
Competes. Because I listened to Tony Sperano's press conference after the game, and it was, you know, you could see what it's doing to him too. I'm sure everybody in that Oakland locker room, everybody in that organization is just, this is just, you know, pulverizes you. It just grinds you to the ground. And, you know, they're going to win a game. I really do believe they're going to win a game, but I don't think it's going to be this week.
All right, so you're going to Kansas City as well. Cleveland at Atlanta then. We move on to the Sunday games. This is a notable one for last week, Jeff. You were saying the first place Browns, they went from first to worst just through one loss. That shows how tough the AFC North is. But they get Josh Gordon back this week.
Yeah, they get Josh Gordon back, and you know, Atlanta's a team that, you know, as good as they looked against Tampa earlier in the year, they've had some games where they've looked just as bad. I really truly think the Browns will bounce back this week. So even though it's in Atlanta, I'll take the Browns.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Browns as well. I think they're the better team. The New York Jets coming off their bye at the Buffalo Bills. A couple of games now where that Bills offense has got really bogged down. I watched the Thursday night game against Miami. That defense is for real in Buffalo. They are Mario Williams, Jerry Hughes. They get after you. But the offense is a concern. But as this game is in Buffalo, I am going to pick the Bills to win. But I think it'll be another defensive effort.
But yeah, I think the Bills are going to win, but I'm going to tell you what, the temperature up here in Buffalo is not very, it's cold outside, but it's hot inside of those offices. Uh-huh. And One Bills Drive, because the media is really on Marone. I mean, really on Marone. Decision to punt the ball, you know, they got it at the 47-yard line with I think 5 or 9 minutes left to go in the game. And then Miami takes the ball for 5 minutes and they don't get enough possessions at the end of the game. Orton has really flattened off, his production has flattened off in the last couple of weeks. But I just believe that the Jets coming up here against that front is going to be too much. So I'm going to take Buffalo.
All right. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Chicago Bears. Lovie Smith returns to Chicago. I guess looking at the Bears last week, they were down. They kind of made a bit of a statement. They were down by 10. This is a team that had given up 50 points in each of its previous games. And they did bounce back, Jeff. I mean, they had to. We know their season, not just their season was on the line, there were probably jobs on the line as well. They bounced back. They got the performances from the guys you would expect to see them making plays for the Chicago Bears. I think they probably got too much for Tampa Bay, but what do you make of how they played last week?
Well, I think it was good, and I'm happy for Mark that his team bounced back for him. You know, they had given up for the first time in modern NFL history. No team had given up 50 points 2 weeks in a row, and you know, they all of a sudden they're down 10. And like you said, they could have folded the tent and gone home and given up another 35 or 40, but they didn't. They rallied back. Marshall made a great play on a post cut. The Bears did enough to win. I think the Bears are much more talented than the Bucs are. So I'm going to take the Bears. But, you know, this will be an interesting one to watch with Lovie going back to Chicago.
Cincinnati at Houston. So the Bengals got a big win on the road against New Orleans in New Orleans, and now they face Houston, who have begun the Ryan Mallett era, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bengals. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was a big, big win for them, a big win to go into New Orleans and beat New Orleans in New Orleans. And they're starting to get a little healthier, and I think again that they're a better football team at this point right now than the Texans are.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Cincinnati as well. Jacksonville at Indianapolis. There's a bit. Colts have lost Ahmad Bradshaw now for the year with a broken leg. I think this is clearly an Indianapolis win, but the bigger worry might be that the Colts are beating who we would expect them to beat, but they've not really knocked off a true heavyweight yet this year.
Don't have that signature victory that you look for. But you know what? I think, as you say, that they're just too good right now for Jacksonville. And this is, you know, again, another one of those, call it soft win, if you will. But it's a win. And right now in the National Football League, they don't ask how, they just ask how many.
All right, so we're both going Colts at Green Bay at Minnesota. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is just playing out of this world. How do you see this one playing out, Jeff?
Too much. I think the Packers are too much offensively. You know, it's going to be outdoors in Minnesota, but shoot, they play outdoors in Green Bay. So, I don't think it's going to affect, I don't think it'll affect them at all. And I just think they're right now playing really, maybe as good a football as they've played in the league.
Detroit at New England is our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday evening. And I still think Detroit will present a challenge because, you know, after the two early touchdowns by the Arizona Cardinals, Detroit's defense was very good. So I'm very interested to see how or if Detroit can get after Tom Brady or if New England come out and do what they did again and go heavy run with a bit of Brady and Gronkowski mixed in. This could be a good one, Jeff.
Yeah, I think this will be an interesting one to see how that front from Detroit does against the offensive lineman of the Patriots or the Patriots offensive line does against the front of the Lions. The Patriots at home, I think that's where the edge is, and I'm going to give Brady and crew my vote for a win on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going Brady and the Patriots as well. Tennessee at Philadelphia, a chance for the Eagles to bounce back or a chance for Tennessee to prove that they were pretty unlucky to lose to Pittsburgh last night?
Well, you know, that they played much better than people thought they were going to play, and you know, that's a, you know, that's good sign for, you know, Ken Wisenhunt and his team. But I think the Eagles at home bouncing back, they were embarrassed last week defensively. They were embarrassed and in Green Bay, and I think they'll bounce back in this one.
Okay, so we're both going Philadelphia there. St. Louis at San Diego, and the Chargers just about got the win against the Raiders. Phillip Rivers tweaked his knee in that game, but did finish it out. We know that Jeff Fisher's teams, they're tough. They've beaten Denver, Seattle, and San Francisco this season now. So how do you see this one going, Jeff?
To me, what I want to see now out of St. Louis is I want to see consistency.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Like you said, they've had huge wins over the course of the season, but then they've lost to people that, you know, that you would think they can compete with. So I'm going to take St. Louis, and even though it's in San Diego, because I really think that this is a game for them to, you know, take a step as an organization.
I'm just going to copy you. I was going Rams to win on the road as well. Arizona at Seattle. I'm going to say it right now. We'll stick with the road team. I know that Seattle is a tough, tough place to go, but there's just this overriding belief in Arizona at the moment. And I think they can physically match up, although maybe they don't run the football that well. So that would be a concern. But I'm going to say Arizona find a way to get it done.
You know what? I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to, you know, as much as I respect what Arizona's done, and, you know, you know, I'm a big fan of Bruce Arians. I just think that the Seahawks, they're going to play at home. They know what this game means to their season. This is a huge, huge game for them, and an opportunity, you know, that you know, isn't going to come around again. This is a chance to get back in the race, and I just really believe that Pete will have them ready to play, and they'll play well at home.
All right, so you're going to Seattle. I'm going Arizona in that one. Our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday night is the Miami Dolphins at the Denver Broncos. And if Miami are going to win, Jeff, they need that same sort of defensive ferocity they had against the Buffalo Bills. But I think that's quite tough to ask for against Peyton Manning, although we did see him affected by pressure in St. Louis. So this, again, could be an interesting one.
Yeah, and again, same thing. I think, you know, that Cameron Wake in that front, they're going to have to really, really play well. But I just don't see in Denver, in the cold, in the thin air, with a Peyton. One of the things about Peyton Manning and all great quarterbacks is once they don't play well or they have an off game, watch out the next week.
Yeah, you don't get them back to back, do you?
You're going to get the A game next week. And
yep.
this is going to be the... That'll carry them over the Dolphins, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going Denver to win that game. Too many weapons offensively. Washington at San Francisco. We've talked a lot about RG3. How do you see this one playing out?
I just think San Francisco's a better football team. And
yeah,
all the stuff swirling around, you know, the organization in Washington doesn't help an under-talented team, you know, win on the road. So, again, I think the 49ers will win this one convincingly.
Dallas at the New York Giants. Eli throws 5 interceptions at home in a 6-point loss. The last one to Chris Borland was an absolute killer when they'd got down near the goal line and had a chance to win the game. I've got to go Dallas here, Jeff. I mean, they're just, again, if we're going to talk, I know we like to look at storylines and, you know, Eli might bounce back, but Dallas are just the better team. This is still a team game, and they've got to think that it's the Cowboys who are going to take this one.
Yeah, better team coming off a bye too. Mm. And I just think that they're, you know, the Cowboys looked around last week and, you know, everybody in the division lost, and they now know that they can really put a stranglehold on the thing if they go up there and play well in New York. So I think the Cowboys will win it.
Last game is interesting. Baltimore at New Orleans. So again, Baltimore will be coming off their bye. And New Orleans, who've won 11 in a row at home, Jeff, have now suddenly dropped back-to-back games in the Superdome. And I said this during our halftime roundup on Sky Sports when the Bengals were basically trying to run out the clock before halftime, and that Saints defense allowed Jeremy Hill to rip off a 62-yard gain, and it set up basically a free field goal for the Bengals. And I said, Rob Ryan's just turned to everyone on that sideline and said, beep, 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 tackle, beep, run, beep, 62 yards, beep. I mean, it must have driven him mad, but that aura has gone from the Saints at the moment playing at home.
Yeah, they're not. There's something about them. They're not playing particularly well on offense either.
Mm.
You know, they're just not playing good football right now. And, you know, like you say, the Superdome was that's always been a tough, tough place to win. I just, you know, again, I just am not sold on the Ravens 100%.
I'm actually going to pick the Saints after saying all that.
I am too. I'm going to take the Saints, and some of that's with my heart, I know, but I just think that they'll play better.
All right, couple of quick questions from the mailbag then, Jeff, to finish us off this week. Daniel Downs asks, who has the final say when calling a special teams trick play like a fake punt? Is it the head coach or the special teams coordinator?
Normally it's the head coach. All fakes go through the head coach. Now, they will, in the preparation in the week, they'll say, okay, they'll sit down and look at it. It may be a specific look or a down and distance tendency that they get or whatever, and then they'll have what we call parameters for the fake. So, for example, we know that if we line up the ball on the left hash, they're going to overload the field to try and block the kick. They're short a gap on the weak side. If we get that look, the fake's up in this field zone, this, you know, score in the game. So during the game, the special teams coach keeps track of those situations, goes to the head coach and said, it's up. And then the head coach says, gives you the okay or no go. And then further, when you go on the field, there's usually an abort call or a fail-safe call in the call that if you don't get the specific look that you see, you get out of the fake on the field. So there's about three different checklists it's got to go through to get it run. But, you know, again, that's why those things, when they work, they're so phenomenal, because, you know, it's a lot of preparation, a lot of checks and balances that has to go through to get it run, and they're one of the most exciting plays in football, I think.
Good question here, Jeff, from Dylan Erickson. It might actually be two questions in one, but he says, can Jeff tell us a little bit more about the A-gap and the secrets of a well-executed blitz?
Okay, well, the A-gap, if this is really stuff that we can get into as we get back and start working with the, you know, with the telestrator and the, you know, all the technology we're going to have at Sky, but basically all the gaps, which are the spaces between offensive linemen, so the space between the center and the right guard, the center and the left guard, those are considered the A gaps. The B gaps are the gap between the offensive guard and the offensive tackle, and the C gap is the tackle to the tight end, and the D gap is outside the tight end. And typically when you design a blitz, it's to overload a gap. So it may be to get two guys in a gap, so you have more defenders in a gap than there are blockers in a gap, or you attack a specific scheme because it's weak in a gap. You run a linebacker through a gap. Typically, gap blitzes are best executed when you get, number one, a mismatch. So, for example, you get a big linebacker on a small back, you get a defensive lineman against a back, or you overload the gap where you get more people in the gap than they can block.
Yeah.
And timing is really critical on those kinds of blitzes.
And I guess the A-gaps then, Jeff, if you just described them, they're pretty critical because the quickest route to the quarterback is straight up the middle.
Absolutely. And that's why you see A-gap blitzes were the biggest reason why people got into the shotgun, because it is so difficult to protect those A-gaps effectively when the quarterback's behind the center because he's right there. And you crowd the ball, you got your front foot up in that gap, and if the guard doesn't get down or the back doesn't step up right now, you're right on the quarterback. So, you know, again, all protection is built around being firmest inside, A gap out, and defenses are built the other way. Defenses are built around containment from the D gap in. So it's just the structure and strategy of the game.
Let's take one more question before we send you on your way for your playoff preparations, Jeff. Bill Badger says, how badly does Mark Sanchez have to play for the Eagles before people stop blaming the Jets media, Jets fans, Jets coaches, the offense and the defense for his failings? I mentioned on Sky Sports as we went into that Eagles and Packers game that Sanchez had a chance to be a good redemption story, but that we shouldn't get carried away that he beat the Carolina Panthers. I guess, by the same token, we shouldn't get carried away that he was pretty poor in a loss to the Green Bay Packers, but we did see some of those old Mark Sanchez-type mistakes that were plaguing him in New York. So, you know, one swallow does not make a summer. We understand that, but we've seen this Mark Sanchez movie before.
Yeah, and again, what I want to see is a body of work.
Yep.
Right. I want to see not one game, particularly against a team like Carolina that's struggling right now on defense. I want to see a body of work. Now, I'm hopeful for a redemption story because I love those stories.
Yep.
And it had to be just awful for him in New York. You know, the way the media, he became basically the poster child for everything that's wrong with the Jets. Mm. Now, he has a chance in Philadelphia with better players around him and a system that is more suited to his talent to be that redemption story. But I'm not buying in until I see 4, 5, 6 games of that kind of play that he showed against Carolina.
No,
because like you said, in Green Bay, there were splashes of, oh, no, not again.
Yeah, there were. There were bad signs there for the Eagles. So, again, I think we need to see Sanchez over a few weeks. Jeff, we're out of time. Tell us then, when's the big game, the Hamilton Tiger Cats? It's the Eastern.
Sunday at 1 o'clock, we have Montreal in here for the Eastern Division Championship and you know, a trip to the 102nd Grey Cup in Vancouver the following weekend, and that's our Super Bowl. So we're down to there are 4 teams left now, and Edmonton and Calgary in the West and ourselves in Montreal in the East. And, you know, again, to think that it's 102 Grey Cups. We haven't even had 50 Super Bowls yet. We've had 102 Grey Cups up here. So it's a phenomenal thing to be a part of. And, you know, we're really lucky and looking forward to going out and competing on Sunday.
All right. We wish you all the best. Fingers crossed, mate. All the best.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
All right. That's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are a USP content production. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Win or lose on Sunday, Jeff Reinbold will be back next week, and we will chat to you about everything that happened in week 12. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.